Let's go back and look at the two truths again according to Svatantrika. So remember, there was no definition for them in this text. But to get a better idea of how they view the two truths, in this tenets text, they sort of give the etymology of the word ultimate truth and conventional truth, how it's understood according to Svatantrika. Ultimate truth is in Tibetan, Dung Dam Denba, which literally can also be understood as it says here, highest object truth. So Dung means object, and Dam can mean highest or supreme. So ultimate truth can be highest object truth. And so here it says, in the term ultimate truth or highest object truth, highest is a non-contaminated awareness. Object is that which is found by that awareness. Because they are not deceptive, they are truths. And the commentary says, highest in the term highest object truth refers to a non-contaminated awareness, an exalted wisdom consciousness realizing non-true existence. Object refers to the object found by that consciousness. Since truths subsist in the way they appear, they do not deceive one who perceives them, therefore they are called truths. I think this is why realizing a selfness as a person is not ultimate truth, because it's not the highest object. It's just realizing no self-sufficient self. It's not realizing lack of true existence. And conventional truth is a little bit, as I explained earlier, that kunsop denba, kunsop can mean like obscured, thoroughly obscured. So it says here, because they obstruct, they are obscurational, i.e. conventional truths. Because of being truths from the perspective of obscure, they are others. Obscure, they are other. So again, it's the idea that these are truths for ignorance, that they appear to truly exist, and for ignorance that accepts that. So the term conventional truth are those things which are true for ignorance. So these phenomena here. Of course, ultimate truth is we come to realize they do not exist as they appear. They are empty of true existence. Okay. Concealer or obscurer. Yeah, same thing. Kunsop means obscure or conceal. Yeah. Exactly. It conceals how they actually exist. Okay. If we go on in the text then, and there's something to comment on the next sentence. So we're at the top of page 20. Proponents of Svatantrika Svatantrika accept that the five sense objects, form and so forth, are different entities from consciousness and that they are gross external objects composed of partless particles. So there's a footnote here that doubts this, because it says in Jungyam Shaper's text, in this tenet's text, it's explicitly saying that there are no Chittamatrans or Majjhamikas who accept partless particles. And I think that's the general assertion. So the fact that he says that they're composed of partless particles needs a bit of investigation. But certainly what is true here is that the Svatantrika Svatantrikas, like the Svatantrikas, accept that forms are external objects. But of course they don't accept that they're truly existent. Whereas the Yogacara Svatantrika accept that five sense objects, forms and so forth, are one entity with the conscious apprehending them, meaning they're internal. So the Yogacara Svatantrika, like the Chittamatrans, say there's no external reality. They are internal to the mind. But of course, they do not accept Chittamatra's view that they are truly existent. So they're the two subschools of how they accept objects. Well, Chittamatrans accept that this flower is same entity as mine, internal, but it still truly exists. Svatantrika, the Yogacara Svatantrika say it's internal to the mind, but it's not truly existent. Because it's merely imputed by the mind. It's imputed by the mind. That it inherently exists, but it doesn't exist independent of the consciousness observing it. Well, I think they maybe still talk about mind bases of all, but the mechanism of that, they would have a different presentation. I don't think that their presentation, I think, about that, I don't think exists in this tenets text, but it obviously would be not the same. But there will be some similarities, of course.
Yeah. So with the mind, they're not making simultaneous?
They may say that they're simultaneous, but still they wouldn't accept that they're truly existent. So, but again, I haven't seen the presentation of what they actually assert there. But from what we've seen, we can understand that it's internal to the mind and it doesn't truly exist. That much we can know from this text. Otherwise, we have to dig into some, maybe in here, you may find something extra about this mechanism. Okay. Way of asserting object possesses. So again, as with the earlier schools, we start with the illustration of the person. And here it says the mental consciousness is accepted to be illustration of person. Of course, this is according to the Saltantrika Svatantrika, the Yogacara Svatantrika, would be the mind basis of all. And we can actually see that if we look in our four Buddhist tenet systems, we can see that the assertion that the mental consciousness is an illustration of the person is only according to the Saltantrika Svatantrikas. And the Yogacara Svatantrikas, like the Chittamatrans, would say the mind basis of all is the illustration of the person, even though it doesn't explicitly say that here. And also, they accept the six collections of consciousness, so that would also be the Saltantrika Svatantrikas. The Yogacaras would accept, of course, the eight collections of consciousness, including the mind basis of all. Again, not explicitly stated here. And then if we go into the awarenesses, again, we have two types of awareness, valid cognition, non-valid cognition. So like the lower schools, valid cognition is necessarily new, meaning the first moment. So the second moment of a valid cognition is no longer valid cognition, like all the lower schools. Whereas, of course, Prasangika, as we're going to see in the next section, don't accept that. For Prasangika, a subsequent cognition is necessarily a valid cognition because pramana, pra, doesn't mean new, it just means prime. There are two types of valid cognition, as the lower schools, valid perception and valid inference, so same as the lower schools. And here again, the Saltantrika Svatantrikas do not accept self-cognizing perception, whereas the Yogacaras, like the Chittamatrans, accept all four types of perception, the sense, mental, yogic, and self-cognizing perception. And again here, it talks about the self-cognizing and the yogic perception are necessarily non-mistaken consciousnesses, which again implies for the yogic perception, which of course includes realizing impermanence, self of person. The fact that it's non-mistaken implies also in Svatantrika, only an Arya being, someone who's realized emptiness, has this yogic perception of impermanence and selfness as a person. Whereas what we're going to see in Prasangika, they assert that actually someone who's not realized emptiness directly can have a direct perception of impermanence and selfness as a person. But this school and the Chittamatra don't accept that. And like before, it says the other two, sense perception, mental perception, can either be mistaken or non-mistaken. So anyone care to posit the examples of that? So here we are in the Yogacara Svatantrika system. So for them, in a sense perception, what would be mistaken? What's an example of a mistaken sense perception? Remember, Yogacara Svatantrika. Correct. So for them, for the Yogacara Svatantrika, the sense perception apprehending form is mistaken because that form appears to be external when it's not. what would be non-mistaken sense perception?
It's not it's dependent.
Non-mistaken. So what's a non-mistaken sense perception? The example that I saw in another text is that perceiving the color, let's say purple, as purple. It's not mistaken in that sense. I mean, it's mistaken with respect to being external, but in terms of perceiving the color in a correct way, it's not mistaken. I mean, not really saying much, is it? It's a bit lame, but that's the example I saw. Okay, for mental perception, what's mistaken? What's a mistaken mental perception? So it's the same, observing form. It appears to be external. And the non-mistaken, again, would be a clairvoyance and so forth. Now, here in the next paragraph, it says the proponents of Saltrantika, Chittamatra, and Svatrantika all assert the following. The reason that it's saying all of these assert this is because Prasangika don't assert any of these. Just to highlight that actually what's coming, Prasangika don't accept this. That's why it actually says Saltrantika, Chittamatra and Svatrantika all accept this. So let's see what they say and why Prasangika don't accept this point. So the first one is, perception is necessarily a consciousness freer from conceptuality. So we saw that in all the lower schools that was the case, that perception is direct, non-conceptual. So why would, and this is something Prasangika don't accept. So they're actually accepting some perceptions can be conceptual. How's that possible? No, perception could be conceptual. That's what it's implying, and that's the case. So why can sense perception? Why could it be conceptual in Prasangika? No. No, it's to do with this word perception. The Sanskrit word is pratyaska. And all the lower schools interpret that as perception, the subject. Whereas Prasangika interpret that as the object, perceptible object. That word, they say, is talking about the object more than the subject. So they're not talking about a direct perception or perceiver. They say that what's directly perceptible. It, like the word, you know, in pramana, these schools say pramana, and that's one of the points coming up. The word pra in pramana for them means new. That's why second moment's not valid. Prasangika says, no, pra doesn't mean new, it means prime. So second moment is valid for Prasangika. Similarly here, this term, they interpret the Sanskrit term differently. That what these schools interpret as perceiver, direct perceiver, the subject, they interpret as perceptible object. So that object that can be perceived can be conceptual. Anyway, so that's coming up. So. Because remember, all the lower schools say things inherently exist, whereas Prasangika don't say they're not. Okay, the second one, subsequent cognition is necessarily a non-valid cognition. So as we saw, for all these schools, pramana, pra means new, so second moment is not valid, it's subsequent. Prasangika is actually the opposite. Subsequent cognition is necessarily valid cognition. Well, you can use the word, but it's valid. It's a valid cognition. I mean, you can talk about a subsequent cognition, the second moment of something, but for them it's not non-valid, it's valid. Okay, here's another one. The third one. A consciousness that is mistaken with respect to its determined object is necessarily a wrong consciousness. And I think all of these three now coming are, again, to do with this idea of perceptible object. So for Prasangika, any consciousness is valid with respect to its appearing object. Any appearing object. So even, and that we see in an example in the later, even, you know, the classic example that doesn't exist is the horns of a rabbit. So even to the mind apprehending horns of a rabbit, that is a valid perception with respect to the appearance of horns of a rabbit. No? Not with respect to the horns of a rabbit as the object, but with respect to the appearance. Yeah, the conception. Yeah. So for them, if it's necessarily valid with respect to its appearing object, prasangika. Yeah. With respect to the appearance of the pot. Whether or not it's valid with respect to the actual object, it's not a valid cognition with respect to horns of a rabbit, because it doesn't exist, but with respect to that appearance, it's valid, because it's a direct perceiver. It's directly having that as an object. What it's referring to, of course, doesn't exist. So that's sort of a little bit why... So a consciousness mistaken with respect to its determined object is necessary wrong consciousness. For prasangika, all consciousness in an ordinary being are mistaken with respect to the determined object because they appear to inherently exist, but there can be valid cognizer for prasangika. So even though it's mistaken with respect to the object which seems to inherently exist, is still a valid cognizer. Whereas for the lower schools, if it's mistaken with respect to its determined object, it's a wrong consciousness.
Okay. So even though
it's mistaken,
they still acknowledge it as being
something that's valid. Yeah. With, for prasangika, this flower appears to the sense and mental consciousness as it exists inherently. So that consciousness is mistaken with respect to an inherent existing flower, but it is a valid consciousness establishing flower exists. And the last two points are this idea of prasangika that the mind is always valid with respect to its appearing object. So it's refuting those two points here. So let's leave that there, and we'll look at the prasangika assertions tomorrow with respect to these points. And then hopefully it'll be a bit more clear, the prasangika perspective of valid cognition and non-valid cognition. Okay, if we go on to the way of asserting selflessness... Sure. Sure. I mean, of course they assert wrong consciousness. So the mind apprehending horns of a rabbit is a wrong consciousness. It doesn't exist. But it's a valid cognition with respect to the appearance, not to the thing itself. So prasangika is only saying that with respect to the appearing object, whatever's appearing, it's directly perceiving the appearance. I mean, whether or not that's actually referring to something valid that exists, we have to investigate. But with respect to the actual appearance, it's valid.
Which is incorrect, then, because
Valid. Yeah, an incontrovertible, non-deceptive cognition, yeah.
But only with respect to the appearance. Yeah. So that's a little bit the difference.
Could you say the same thing about, say, optical illusions?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So therefore it's a valid cognition.
With respect to the appearance. So if, you know, the seeing two moons... The mind of Prasangika is valid with respect to the appearance of two moons. It's not valid with respect to there being actually two moons, of course. But the appearance is valid because it's directly having the appearance. Okay, let's move on to outline six, way of asserting selflessness. So maybe we can have a look at the, again, the coarse and subtle selflessness chart. The person being empty of being permanent, unitary, independent is accepted to be a coarse selfness as a person, and the person being empty of being self-sufficient, substantial, existent, subtle selfness as a person. So, thereby, like all the lower schools, Chittamatra, Sautrantika, Vaibhashika, all in agreement. Coarse selfness as a person is a lack of a unitary, independent, heartless, unchanging person. The subtle selfness of a person is realizing a lack of a self-sufficient, substantially existent self. And they're all in agreement that by realizing this subtle selfness of a person, you can achieve liberation, you can achieve nirvana. So they're all in agreement with this. But then, of course, when we talk about selfness as a phenomena, as we saw in the two first schools, they accept self a phenomena. There is truly existent external phenomena. Chittamatra, of course, say there is a selfness as a phenomena. For them, it's the phenomena empty of being external, and that's the cognitive obscuration, stopping us from achieving enlightenment. Here, the Yogacara Svatantrika also accept the same as the Chittamatrans in terms of that form and cognition apprehending that form being empty of being different substances. But they say this is a coarse selfness as a phenomena. So the Yogacara Svatantrikas also say we can realize there are no external phenomena. But the Yogacara Svatantrikas would say that that's not enough to achieve enlightenment, as the Chittamatrans say. They say that there's a deeper level of ignorance with respect to these phenomena, and that is grasping them to exist truly. So the subtle selflessness of phenomena here, all phenomena being empty of true existence, accepted to be subtle selflessness of phenomena for the Yogacara Svatantrikas. And also, of course, for the Sautrantika Svatantrikas, they would not accept that form and the cognition apprehending form are empty of being different substances because they are different substances. But of course, they would accept that all phenomena are empty of true existence is the subtle selflessness of phenomena, and that's the cognitive obscuration. That's what's stopping us from achieving enlightenment. Any questions so far? Brain stopped. No. So again, what we're saying, to summarize that, is we can talk about afflictive obscurations. What's stopping us from achieving nirvana? All schools so far, Vaibhashika, Sautrantika, Chittamatra, Svatantrika, all say the same thing. What's stopping us from achieving nirvana is grasping onto self-sufficient, substantially existent self. If we can eliminate that, if we can realize this selfness as a person, there's no self-sufficient, substantially existent self, we can achieve nirvana. All schools so far are in agreement there. No difference. Now when we talk about phenomena, there's big differences. The Vipaka Sartrantika say there's no problem there. Phenomena exist as they appear. They truly exist. Chinnamatran say no. Phenomena appear to be external. They're not external. If we realize they're not external, we can move from nirvana to enlightenment. So if we realize that they are not external, i.e. not different substantial entities, we can achieve enlightenment. Svartantrikas in general say what's the cognitive obscurations is the cognitive obscuration is that we grasp onto phenomena as truly existent. We need to realize things are not truly existent, and thereby we can achieve enlightenment. So that's the cognitive obscurations for them. Prasangikas would agree with that, but of course they have slightly different idea what they mean by true existence.
And the Chittamatras, this selfless as a phenomenon.
Yeah. So that's realizing there's no external reality.
Yeah, so that's not that cognitive.
It is. Cognitive instructions, yeah.
It's cognitive.
Yeah. So both Chittamatra and Majjhimika are Mahayana. So they talk about two obscurations, afflictive and cognitive. So far, again, all schools say the same thing in terms of afflictive. For Vaibhaka Sartrantika, there are no cognitive obscurations because things exist as they appear. For Chittamatra, the cognitive obscuration is grasping onto things as being external. For Svartantrika, cognitive obscuration is grasping onto them truly existent.
And that's true for both the two subdivisions.
Yeah.
Of
yeah.
Even
though they're
coming from different perspectives.
Yes.
Where do they see the difference between truly existent and inherently existent?
We'll talk about that tomorrow. But again, for Prasangika, true existence and inherent existence mean the same thing. For Svartantrika, they don't. Svartantrika are saying that true existence means existing independent of the mind, which all Majjhimikas refute. But they say that even though things don't truly exist, i.e. they don't exist independent of the mind, they still have some inherent nature. They still exist from their own side and have inherent existence. They see no contradiction in accepting those two things.
Mm-hmm.
They see no contradiction. Of course, Prasangika say there's a big contradiction there.
Yes.
Because again, Prasangika, Svartantrika are effectively saying that there needs to be something coming from the side of the basis, suggesting to me that this is a flower for me to call it a flower. There must be something coming from the side of the object. Otherwise, I could just call it anything. There's no basis for it to call it a flower. Therefore, it has to have some inherent existence from its own side. And that, together with the consciousness, brings the flower into existence. So there's no flower existing truly there, independent of the mind.
And that something is more than a sensory emission of light.
Of course, Prasangika would say, if you accept that, you're just like one of the other lower schools. Because for us, that means that you exist independent. You know, you can't have it, they'd say to Svartantrika, you can't have it both ways. You know, either you're in our camp or you're in their camp. You can't sit on the fence. So they'd say Svartantrikas are fence sitters. They want a bit of both. Okay. Then if we look at the bottom of page 20, it says the two subtle selflesses are differentiated by way of object of negation and not by way of basis of emptiness. So what that's saying is that the two selflesses are person and phenomena. And it says here they're differentiated by in terms of what's negated. So for person, what is negated is self-sufficient, substantially existent self. For a phenomena, what's negated is true existence. So they're different in terms of what is negated between person and phenomena. As we're going to see in Prasangika, that's not the case. for Prasangika, they're both on whether it's person or phenomena, we're negating inherent existence for both. So the thing we're negating in Prasangika is not different. It's inherent existence in both cases. But here, as with Chittamatra, when we talk about person and phenomena, what we negate is different depending on whether we're talking person or phenomena. For person, we're negating self-sufficient self. Phenomena here, we're negating true existence. It says here, because the refutation of the object of nation, true existence, upon the basis of person is subtle selfness of phenomena, and refutation of self-sufficient substantial existence upon base of person is selflessness of person. And it's, the next paragraph is saying the same thing. The two conceptions of self are differentiated by way of the mode of apprehension and not by way of observed object, because through observing the basis of person and apprehending it to be truly existent is a conception of self of phenomena, and through observing the basis of person and apprehending it to be self-sufficient, substantial existence is a conception of self of person. So again, for Svatantrika and Chittamatra, when we talk about person and phenomena, the difference here is in terms of what we're negating. When we're negating self-sufficient person, that's based on person, and for phenomena, we're negating true existence here. Whereas again in Prasangika, whether we talk about person or phenomena, we're negating the same thing, inherent existence. So that's why it's being presented here, to distinguish between this school and Prasangika school. Clear? Maybe. Any questions? Otherwise, we'll launch into the seventh and last section of the Svatantrika. Okay. Grounds and paths. See, let's see what the Svatantrikas say about grounds and paths. And here we have differences between the Yogacharas and the Sautrantika Svatantrikas. So let's have a look at what the Yogacharas talk about first. So in both of these cases, we talk about the three vehicles or the three lineages, the hearers, so like the lower schools, all the schools except there are three types of practitioner, three lineages or vehicles. There's the hearer, the solitary realizer, and the bodhisattva. And so here the Yogacharas, Svatantrikas, saying there's differences between these three vehicles in terms of three different obscurations that are the main objects of abandonment and three different views that are the main objects of meditation. So let's look at what these obscurations and views are. So here, it says, those of the hearer's lineage, having taken the conception apprehending the person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent, together with its retinue, as their main object of abandonment, through taking as the antidote to that the view realizing the person to be empty of being self-sufficient, substantially existent, as the main object of meditation, they attain a small enlightenment. So here, their main object of abandonment is the person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent. Or, in other words, they take the afflictive obscuration as their main object of abandonment. And the view that to overcome that obscuration, of course, is realizing a lack of self-sufficient, substantial self. So I think that's straightforward. So the hearer, the obscuration is the afflictive obscurations, they're overcoming, and they're overcoming that by realizing those lack of self-sufficient substantial self, and through that they achieve nirvana, they become an arhat. Straightforward. Now it says, those of the solitary hearer realizes lineage, take the conception apprehending form and the valid cognition apprehending that form to be different substances as their main object of abandonment. So remember, the yogacharas are like the chittamatrams. They say that things don't exist externally. And this realization that there's no external world for them were this coarse cognitive obscuration. So the fact that things are grasping onto them existing externally for the yogacharas here is a coarse cognitive obscuration. The subtle one, of course, is grasping onto true existence. But through realizing this, through overcoming this by realizing that they are, here it says, by the view realizing apprehending subjects and apprehending objects to be empty of being different substances as their main object of meditation, they attain a middling enlightenment. So they overcome this by the view realizing a lack of non-duality, a lack of external world. For the Yogacara Svatantrikas. So we're going to look at the Svatantrikas soon. So this is only Yogacara Svatantrika. So their assertion is that the solitary realizer does something that's a little bit smarter than the hearer. Yeah, because to realize this is not more difficult than this. So they say solitary realizer is a little bit more intelligent. So they also would realize this, but they would also realize this by realizing there's no external objects. But for them, realizing this is not enough to get us to enlightenment. So this will get us to nirvana, but not to enlightenment. It's the bodhisattva, according to them, says, the bodhisattva, having taken conception of true existence together with its latencies as the main object of abandonment. So this is the subtle cognitive obscurations. And by realizing all phenomena to lack true existence as their main object of meditation, they attain a great enlightenment. So their view, what they realize is a lack of true existence.
Is the subtle cognitive obscuration the same as the stain of the karmic on the bond?
Depending on who you talk to. To Svatantrika, the subtle cognitive obscurations is the conception of true existence together with its seeds. I think they don't really talk about this latencies. We only saw the latencies in Chittamatra, and you'll see them in Prasangika. So for them, the cognitive obscurations is the grasping onto things existing truly and the seeds of that. So this is for the Yogacharas, they say for the three vehicles, they overcome three different levels of obscuration through realizing three different things. The Svatantrikas don't agree with that, of course. It says here, according to proponents of Svatantrika, there is no difference between hearers and solitary realizers regarding their main objects of abandonment and main objects of meditation, because they are both similar in taking the afflictive obscurations as their main object of abandonment. They're also similar in taking selfness as a person as their main object of meditation. So for the Svatantrikas, they say, the Svatantrikas, they say, we don't agree with you. They say solitary realizers don't do this, that solitary realizers are just the same as the heroes. They both overcome the afflictive obscurations by realizing a lack of self-sufficient self. No difference. And the bodhisattvas, of course, they would accept the same as that. So the only difference is because the soul chantika do accept external phenomena, so they wouldn't actually even accept this idea. So they say that solitary realizers and heroes are the same. They overcome the afflictive obscurations through realizing lack of self-sufficient self. They achieve nirvana. The bodhisattva overcome the cognitive obscurations through realizing lack of true existence, and they achieve enlightenment.
Is this because the self-chantikas, self-chantikas, are closer to the self-chantikas, the sutra school, because they
accept external objects.
Yeah, and they don't assert the mind-based of all in the same way that the yogacharyas do. So then because of that, the yogacharyas have this extra level, in a sense, almost of...
It's because the yogacharas are like Chittamatrans in accepting there's no external reality.
Yeah, so they have the emptiness of form and...
Yes, correct. Yes, correct. Yeah, it's got to fit in somewhere, so let's put it there. You know, these, because often we say that solitary realizes a little bit higher faculty, so it sort of ties in, and so... No, because remember, what makes you a bodhisattva is your aspiration, regardless of your philosophical view.
Okay.
You become a bodhisattva when you spontaneously have the aspiration for enlightenment for the welfare of others, regardless of what your philosophical view is. According to Prasangika, that bodhisattva won't get anywhere unless they have the Prasangika view, or won't get very far.
Yeah.
That's their assertion. But to actually just be a bodhisattva, you don't need to have that view, the Prasangika view. But to progress, then we need it. Okay. However, there is a reason why there is a difference in the results of those two in terms of inferiority and superiority. So again, even though the Solchanchikas say that they realize the same thing and abandon the same thing, they talk about inferiority and superiority. It is because there's a difference in terms of the amount of merit accumulated and length of time accumulating that merit. So even the Svatantrika would say they're superior because they accumulate more merit for a longer time. But their view is the same. They're realizing the same thing, abandoning the same thing. Okay. Any questions? Come on, 4:30. No?
It seems that selflessness phenomena is more kind of subtle than self.
For this school, yes. That's what we've just said. Exactly.
I'm thinking slowly, sorry.
That's exactly what was said on the previous page in that way.
Oh, why is that?
What do you mean, why is that? I mean, to realize this is more subtle than this, because we can still grasp onto this and realize this. You can't realize this and not realize this. It would be impossible.
Yeah. No.
But you can have a realization of this and still be grasping onto true existence. So this is more subtle than this. Even Prasangika would agree this is more subtle than this. But Prasangika wouldn't call that selfness as a person and that selfness as a phenomenon.
Now, I know all the school says that, but I'm just trying to think myself, sure. Is actually selflessness or phenomena more subtle than realizing selflessness?
For Prasangika, it's not.
It's not. Yeah.
It's not.
But there is meant to be one that's meant to be easier to realize than the other.
In terms of these two?
In terms of Prasangika.
No. Yeah. No. Easier, no. For Prasangika, whether we talk about personal phenomena, we are having the same realization, lack of inherent existence.
Yeah,
what they do say is, as a beginner, to get into this practice, they recommend focusing on person because for beginners, it's probably easier to get into the practice, but the actual direct realization of whether it's personal phenomena, I think there's no difference in terms of ease in that sense. But what they do say, again, is that to get into the practice, for most people, they find it easier to start by focusing on the person than the phenomena, but not because it's more coarse or something. It's just because we're more familiar with person. That's all.
That's basically none of it's easy.
Great. <Grace. laughs>
Okay. Let's look at the last two paragraphs, which are a little bit easier, hopefully. Because now we're talking about what's definitive and what's interpretive. So the second last paragraph, it says, the proponents of Svatantrika are similar to the proponents of Chittamatra in accepting two types of sutras, Mahayana and Hinayana, and accepting two paths to sutras, definitive and interpretive. So here in Chittamatra, Svatantrika and Majjhimika, they all talk about what's definitive and what's interpretive. So for Chittamatra, remember, the Chittamatrans are coming from the third turning of the wheel. So they would say that third turning of the wheel is definitive. Whereas the first two, the Four Noble Truths and the Without Characteristics, they say, oh, you'd have to interpret that, because that's sort of saying something different than our view. So you need to interpret those first two turnings of the wheel according to our view from the third turning wheel. That's definitive. That's really the definitive. Actually, we'll read the next paragraph because it talks a bit about this. It says, however, they are not similar in illustrations of these because the proponents of Chittamatra accept the first two turnings of the wheel of Dharma to be sutras of interpretive meaning and the third to be sutras of definitive meaning. In this context, the first and third turnings of the wheel of Dharma are sutras of interpretive meaning. See, so for Svatantrika, like Prasangika, the Majjhimika is coming from the second turning of the wheel of Dharma. So for all Majjhimikas, the first and third turning of the wheel are interpretive because the definitive view is being presented in the second turning of the wheel. But it says here, while the middle turning of the wheel Dharma has both parts, interpretive and definitive. So within Svatantrika, even though their view, their school is coming from the second turning of the wheel, there's still some things we have to interpret in that second turning of the wheel of Dharma. And I'll read out what it says and then I'll explain why. It says, there are two paths in the second turning of the wheel, interpretive and definitive, because those where the qualification of ultimately is applied to the object of vacation are accepted to be sutras of definitive meaning, while those of the middle turning of the wheel, where such is not applied, are accepted to be sutras of interpretive meaning. So what that means is, in that second turning wheel, we have the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. And particularly Heart Sutra, you know, in there it says, there's no form, no feeling, no so forth. And what that means, if you read the whole thing. It means no inherently existent form, no inherent existent feeling, which for Prasangikas is literal. Nothing inherently exists. So for the Prasangikas, the Heart Sutra literally accepted. It's true. So our Tantrikas would go, that's not quite right, actually, because they accept inherent existence. So when the Heart Sutra says no form, meaning no inherent existent form, for Swatantrikas, you can't accept that literally because form is inherently existent, conventionally. So they say, for those, you need to interpret by adding ultimately. There's no form, inherent existent form, ultimately. Whereas in any sutra that says that explicitly, you can accept that literally. So that's what is being mentioned here. Yeah.
Simple question. Which of these were actually written or said by the Buddha? When we're talking about
which of what?
Were these sutras or any of these? What is all this is commentary? And is anything original?
So if we go back to the second last paragraph, it says the proponents of Svatantrika are similar to proponents of Chittamatra in accepting two types of sutra, Mahayana and Hinayana sutra. So, and what we saw last week in the Vaibhashika, I think Svatantrika, most of the Vaibhashika Svatantrika would not accept the Mahayana sutras as the word of the Buddha. According to those schools, yes. According to those schools, they were made up by other people.
Yeah.
That's what they would say. And here, in the Chittamatra and the Majjhimika system, they accept both sets of sutras, but then whether or not you can accept them literally or you have to interpret depends on the view and where this sutra was explained, how it was explained. So sutra, the word sutra, of course, means the word of the Buddha. So we have the teachings of the Buddha, which are called sutras, and then, of course, we have Indian commentaries on those, you know, the text by Nagarjuna and Chandrakirti and all these Indian masters. Of course, they're commentaries, but anything that's called a sutra is the word of the Buddha. Whether or not a particular philosophical school accepts that as a sutra or a teaching of Buddha is another matter. And then even if they do accept that as a teaching of a Buddha, whether or not that is definitive and interpretive, as we see, depends on the philosophical system we are following. And even on that point, there is teachings from the Buddha where he said, this is how you interpret my teachings, which are definitive and which are interpretive. So there's one that we saw earlier, the Sandinamocha Sutra, which comes in the third turning of the wheel, where the Buddha said, this is how you understand what I said is definitive and interpretive. But then there's other sutras, the Akshamati Sutra, I think, where he says something different. So the Chittamatrans use this Sandinamoksha Sutra as the basis for their way of determining whether something is definitive or interpretive. And effectively there, what they're saying for Chittamatra, the first two turnings of the wheel, Four Noble Truths and the Without Characteristics, those two, interpretive. The third turning of the wheel, definitive. For the Svatantrika and Prasangika, the second turning of the wheel has both definitive and interpretive elements, and both first and third turning of the wheel are definitely interpretive. But as we're going to see in Prasangika, how they define interpretive and definitive is not so much whether something's literally acceptable. So here so far, what we've seen in Chittamatra Svatantrika, definitive means literally acceptable. Interpretive means not literally acceptable in general. For Prasangika, they have a different take. They say that anything that teaches lack of inherent existence, definitive.
Anything that doesn't teach that, interpretive. That's their take on definitive and interpretive.
And what sutra is it described that is definitive and
interpretive? I think the Akshamati Sutra is the one that they usually use. I think there's a couple of sutras. It was years ago when I studied this, but I think that was one of the sutras that they use for this, from memory. Of course, my memory's sort of fading, so
I could be completely mistaken, but it seems to be what I remember.
Five minutes, one thing, if there's no more questions. I think everyone's brain is fried. At the risk of frying the brain even more, I'd just like to, if you look at the Mahayana path chart, which we'll look at tomorrow, and this chart is based on the Prasangika view, which we're looking at tomorrow. But also, we can use this particularly for the Svatantrika. It's very closely related. So we see in this Mahayana path, and remember last week we even used something sort of similar in the Vaibhashika Svatantrika in terms of these five stages: accumulation, preparation, seeing, meditation, and more learning. So we could, even in the lower schools, use something similar but with some differences. But here, for Svatantrika, this looks quite similar. The difference being, or one difference being, is if you look underneath the five stages, the five paths, we see when it talks about the 10 grounds on the path of seeing and meditation, the first seven grounds here, it says abandoning the innate afflictive obscurations. And then on ground 8, 9, and 10, it says abandoning cognitive obscurations. So this, for Prasangika, first we have to get rid of the afflictive obscurations. Then only then do we begin to get rid of the cognitive obscurations. So they're sort of serial. One difference here in the Svatantrika is starting from the path of seeing, so our tantricas say we eliminate afflictive obscurations and cognitive obscurations simultaneously. So we're on the first seven grounds, we are, for Svatantrika, we're eliminating afflictive and cognitive obscurations at the same time. But by the time we get to the seventh ground, we've finished eliminating the afflictive obscurations, so we've become an arhat. And then we continue to eliminate the cognitive obscurations, and we only get rid of them finally after the 10th ground. But we start to eliminate the cognitive obscurations from path of seeing for Svatantrika.
So we'll find that in our own practice in the next few weeks.
Right? Of course. I mean, of course, this is all basis for your practice. So you can confirm this through your own direct experience. And then you can come back and report to me whether Svatantrika got it right or whether you're going to refute the Svatantrikas. Yes, we need an answer tomorrow morning, so there's no pressure on you. You've got a whole night to come up with that experience, okay?
One seat.
You can do it. Yeah. So, yeah. Right. And I think the difference, and then we're going to stop, I think the difference comes because what we've seen here is for Svatantrika, both afflictive and cognitive obscurations are conceptions. The afflictive obscuration is conception of self-sufficient self, and the cognitive is a conception of true existence. They're both conceptions, false conceptions. Whereas Prasangika, the two obscurations are not both conceptions. Afflictive obscuration is a conception. Cognitive obscuration is a stain. Very difficult to get rid of. We can only begin to get rid of that very high on the path.
So the cognitive obscuration is not a conception?
For Prasangika, no, it's a stain. It's those latency of ignorance and this mistaken appearance. So it's not a conception, the cognitive obscuration. It's a very subtle stain, very difficult to get rid of. We can only begin to get rid of it much later in the path. Whereas for Svatantrika, both obscurations, afflictive and cognitive, are both conceptions. So we can start to eliminate that from the path of seeing. No, not really.
So it seems to be that if the subtantrika is the same,
they're wrong conceptions.
Because of the view that they have, which is that it's all eternal to the mind.
No. That's only the Yogacaras. Well, so we're not talking about that here. We're talking about conception of self-sufficient self or conception of true existence. Yeah, but even the Yogacaras accept these two conceptions as the afflictive and cognitive obscurations. They're equal. They both agree on that. Anyway, let's stop there. I think we've got more than enough to think about, and we don't want to overload John for his practice tonight. And he's going to report in the morning whether the Svatantrika view is correct or not, based on personal experience. That's the way to test these theories.
I think John will be
non-returner. Huh? You'll be a non-returner tomorrow morning. I hope that it's at least a once returner. You could be a non-returner after tomorrow afternoon. And an arhat then as well. Okay? So only become at most a once returner tonight. Stream entry for sure, and then once returner. Okay. So let's leave it there. And again, before we run away, let's dedicate all the positive potential we've gathered in our meditations and discussions today. So again, we can sit quietly for a minute or two, dedicating in our own way based on our motivation from this morning. And then we can read Shanti Deva's dedication prayer together. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Thank you. Have a nice evening. See you tomorrow morning and see if we can make some sense of the Prasangika view tomorrow.